With the annual NFLPA rookie premiere underway, we take a look at what new Packers wide receiver Trevor Davis is experiencing. We're joined by Ira Boudway of Bloomberg for a behind-the-scenes description. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. To Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Carvu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about the NFLPA rookie premiere, which actually started on Thursday, runs through Saturday with wide receiver Trevor Davis as the only Green Bay Packers player invited to the event. It used to be that the NFLPA rookie premiere took place a week later on the calendar, cutting into practice time, so it's nice to see Davis won't have to miss any OTAs next week to do this. But anticipation of this show, I knew the rookie premiere would take place this weekend, and you hear about it every year, but I never really knew a whole lot about the event, so I wanted to find somebody that did. And I reached out to Ira Boudware of Bloomberg that covered the event last year. So I think you'll enjoy this interview that describes what Packers wide receiver Trevor Davis is experiencing this weekend. So listen in. We're joined now by Ira Boudway of Bloomberg. Ira attended and had an article published on last year's NFLPA rookie premiere, and we're excited to have him share his experience, giving us a behind-the-scenes look at what happens at the event. Ira, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
We're glad to have you. Now, Ira, can you explain in a broad sense what the NFLPA rookie premiere is all about, and as an event now more than 20 years old, how it started?
Sure. It's a gathering. Last year it was at a hotel in L.A. right next to the Staples Center, and it's really the first time that the union, the players union, can get the rookies together to start using them in commercial stuff, whether that's their uniform sales or video games, and sort of teaching them the ropes. It started in 1993. Originally, it was strictly a way for trading card companies like Topps to start getting pictures of the players in their uniforms, because they wanted to release their products when the season, NFL season, starts with all the players who were currently players. But obviously, they don't have any game photography or anything to rely on for new players, so they had to stage some photographs. And so they would get the players in their uniforms, take them out to the LA Coliseum, and take pictures of them doing football things or just standing there, so that they could then put those in the cards. And they still do that part of it, but they quickly expanded it to include sort of very basic do's and don'ts for the players about managing their images, and a lot of other opportunities for league sponsors and union companies that do business with the players' union to start integrating these new players into their advertising, into their licensed products, wherever it may be.
Okay, so for an event rooted in the trading card industry, how do you think they continue to survive when the trading card industry companies like Upper Deck and Panini enjoy just a fraction of the popularity they had 20-some years ago?
Basically, what has happened is the trading card part of it has become just a small part of it. So now Topps and Panini still do their thing on Saturday on the field, But you've got a whole bunch of companies there. EA Sports is there to start getting the players' faces just right to put into the video game and capture extra footage for that. Companies that just want to sort of get in the good graces of players and give them free swag. You know, Samsung and Nike are there with rooms at the hotel where they players go in and get free stuff and walk out. Other smaller companies are there to do things like get the players out in suits so they can promote around the players wearing their clothes or interview them about whatever to use in their online content, or Fanatics, which sells NFL licensed merchandise, gets the players photographed in their team gear so that they can then put that on their website and sell t-shirts and so on. So there's a long list of companies that now the players are kind of run through the paces over the course of 2 or 3 days. They go from room to room, and one after another, these companies ask them to do little things that the companies then use to sell their stuff.
So when you were there last year, can you describe the scene? And you already did a little bit, but can you tell us a little bit about what you observed over the course of a couple of days, maybe about some of the rookies that were there last year?
Sure. So I was there with the class of that include Jamias Winston and Marcus Mariota, and they it begins kind of with an orientation. So they bring them all into a room, and they have former NFL players and union executives sort of talk to them. It's almost like a scared straight about handling, you know, not getting caught up in scandals, handling gotcha questions by the media, and just generally being professionals. They talk to them about players in the past who they tell this story about Jamarcus Russell kind of never showing up to anything on time and having to be roused from his bed to just come down and do the activities at the rookie premiere. And that's sort of like, and look what happened to him. He's an object lesson in what not to do. And so they do that part of it. Honestly, that part of it is, it's hard to tell how much the players really are listening, because these are the NFL, their relationship with the union is just beginning. And so they don't necessarily know the guys who are talking to them. They're in a big group. It's social, can be a little socially awkward. They split them up into smaller groups, but there's 40 of them. So they're, you know, it's like a dozen at a time being talked to. And so it's not like their closest confidants are really going up to them and being like, do this, don't do that. But it is another voice in their ear kind of telling them what the expectations are in the NFL and how fragile their career can be, especially the their potential to earn off the field, which for many guys can be as big or bigger than what they earn on the field, is driven by their behavior. And that's kind of the point that they ram home over and over again, that if you are a guy who companies are afraid to be around because you have a DUI, or because you said something stupid to a reporter, or because you posted something stupid on Instagram, that directly impacts your ability to earn money. So they do that first, and then they take them around and do put them through the paces, like I said, of going from room to room. There's one room where they're interviewed by the NFLPA themselves to sort of find out what they might naturally want to be sponsors for, what kind of deals might make sense for them. So I saw them, for instance, asking Amari Cooper about what his, you know, who he'd like to sponsor. Amari Cooper, the wide receiver for the Raiders, about what he would like to be a sponsor for. And he said, you know, Rolex. And they say, why? He said, because I like their watches. But they find out, is the person the dog lover, then maybe they should have a pet food deal and so forth. And then they go to the next room, and EA Sports wants them to hold their face in a particular way so that this huge rack of cameras can capture it so that it looks right under the helmet in the video game. And then they have them move it a little bit so they get the right angles. And then they take them over to another part of the room and say, tell them their official ratings in the game, and have these sort of two personalities there to reveal sort of their speed rating and all their other ratings and see the players' reactions. And they film that so that they have it for like online video. And they go to the next room, and like I said, there's Fanatics is there having them put on hoodies for their team. And it just goes on and on like that until the last day where they actually put on their uniforms for the first time and go out to the field and have their pictures taken for the trading card. They also sign hundreds and hundreds of trading cards for the companies. a process that takes hours, and they spend a couple hours doing that. They have a big party that Nike did where they show them their jerseys for the first time, and they all get to sort of pose next to their jerseys and send it out on their social media and to their friends.
Crazy, the extent that they go to. Now, as I understand it, NFL Players Inc. uses the Rookie Premier for group marketing rights. And can you kind of explain how that works? Because I think that's kind of a unique topic that's difficult for me and I think many people to kind of wrap their brain around.
Yeah, it is tricky, and it took some explaining for me to get it. There's sort of three ways that you can buy a piece of the NFL if you're a marketer or if you want to advertise your product through some kind of NFL association, or if you want to make a product, a coffee mug with NFL logos on it or something. There's three ways in. One is to do a partnership with the league itself, and the league controls its logos, the team names, the NFL logo. The other is with an individual player, and you can go to them and say, you know, endorse my coffee, and they could do that deal. But if you want them in your ad with their team uniform on, then you also have to do a deal with the league, and you have to do a deal if you're doing more than six players in any kind of product or promotion. If you have, then you have to go to the union and get what's called group rights to do this. So if you want to, for instance, EA Sports obviously has all of the players in its product in the Madden game, so it has to have a deal with the union and the league to show the team's names and to show the players' names. And so that's how it works when you want to buy the whole bag or a large number of players at once. If you want their face, their name, their number, you have to go through the union. It depends. If you're Pepsi and you buy a league-wide sponsorship deal, then when you do that deal, you kind of do two at once. You basically are buying the group rights from the union and the league rights from the league at the same time. But you can split them up. You can go and buy just a group player rights, and you could put them in a video game and just not use any of the NFL team names. You could just make up football team names, as there are, in fact, small versions of like mobile video games that will do this. They'll buy the names of the rights to the players, and then they'll make up imaginary teams and logos to add so that they don't have to pay for the NFL side of the deal. On advertising, if you want to say be Muscle Milk and have NFL players say they use Muscle Milk, but you don't want to do a deal for group rights, you could sign five NFL players and not six and not have to deal with group rights. So it's an endlessly sliced up and carefully monitored market.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like you're pulling back the curtain here. I think that people don't get a look at this kind of thing or even think much about it until somebody explains it to them. We're talking to Ira Boudway of Bloomberg here at Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Ira, I know the NFLPA likes to publicize the education and training they receive at the NFL Rookie Premier, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, but what kind of education do they really get?
It's a kind of due diligence type of effort that I would describe it that the union gives at this event. They bring out veterans, players who are associated one way or another with the union. They bring out the head of the union, Dee Morris, and they tell them, one, that they're there to work for them, that the union's there to protect their rights and to help them promote themselves. And Dee Smith's line always is that he wants the players to get more out of the NFL than the NFL gets out of them. And that's really their job, to try to help players do that. And then they tell them kind of how not to mess it up. Really, that's most of it. They'll do during the media training, they will do a mock interview, and it will start innocuous with questions like, how'd you feel today? And then it will suddenly swerve into, would you be all right with having a gay teammate? And they basically are preparing the players for the way the media sometimes works and to know kind of how to deal with a question they don't expect. And then they talk about legally if you get in trouble, if you do something stupid, or just how easy it is to get caught up in a scandal. They will provide mock scenarios of like a player hosted a party at his house. A woman was there. She was taking pictures. The player didn't like that, grabbed the phone, smashed it on the ground. That this then becomes grounds for a legal case and drags the player into bad headlines and means that when a sponsor is going around looking for potential players for, you know, a product or whatever, they cross that guy off the list. So they talk to them about these things.
Interesting, interesting. I also know one of the most anticipated parts of the rookie premiere is when the players put on their team jerseys for the first time. And again, you alluded to this, you know, earlier, but can you describe that scene and what happens then?
Well, the first reveal is actually all of the jerseys are on dummies, and it's in a club near the Staples Center, near the hotel. And so it's, you know, a bunch of 40-odd NFL rookies and their friends mingling around. And then at some point, they pull the curtain up, and all of the jerseys are on these dummies. And the guys are – it's actually kind of sweet how excited they are to see it. I mean, this is something that – these guys have spent, you know, a lot of hours working toward. And when they see their jerseys for the first time, they're pretty thrilled. They go up on the stage, they stand next to them, they bring their friends over, they pose in front of them, they snap pictures, and they don't actually put them on that night. They then go out to the LA Coliseum the next day, and then it's very much a photo op. You know, they get the sort of straight on looking at the camera shots, they get the sort of staged catching a football shots and that kind of thing. But when they see their jerseys for the first time in real life, they are genuinely thrilled. It's kind of nice to see.
Reading your article, I found it remarkable that the Madden video game franchise accounts for the most revenue for NFL Players Inc. So what role does EA Sports play at the rookie premiere? And again, you allude to this, you know, earlier, but I mean, what specifically do the players do with them?
So they, you know, it is a big moneymaker because that product obviously has every player in it. And it's sort of part of the way that they make their money is by the number of times that you use players and their images in there. So every time they sell one game, one copy of the game, you know, that's the whole batch of players again, you know, all 2,000 players or whatever, get another notch. So they wind up being the biggest source of income, you know, even over Nike for the players union. And so they have one of the bigger rooms at the hotel, and they get some time with each player. And like I said, part of it is beginning to get their faces right. There's an incredible amount of detail that goes into it. This camera array that they used to get it, I think, had something like 2 dozen cameras are on it, and they ask the players to sit there and sort of move their chin up and look up suddenly, and then they capture that and ask for different looks. And that's so that when you're playing that game, when they show the replay close-up, it looks kind of like the player under the helmet. And so they do that, and they shake hands, and then they do the stunt where they tell them what their ratings are, and the players, you know, are usually a little bit disappointed or angry or have some complaints. So.
I can imagine. I think I've seen those videos in the past, actually.
Yeah.
Just kind of a parting thought here. Why do you think the event is limited to 40-some players and not every draft pick or every rookie in the NFL? Don't they deserve that opportunity, too?
It's really just it's the market. You know, the way the world works, a quarterback is more interesting, more valuable to fans than a lineman. Those are glamour positions. The skill positions just get more attention, broadly speaking. You know, if you're trying to sell playing cards, then having running backs and wide receivers and quarterbacks, and you know, I think that's begun to change. You know, the list of possible glamour positions has grown, but it's still a huge disparity there. So this gets reflected in this because the players are really there for commercial purposes. So, you know, last year Brett Hundley was there because a UCLA quarterback is more interesting than, you know, even a fifth round or a fifth pick in the first round who plays offensive line or whatever. So it's not about their value to a team. It's about their value to the market in terms of their face and how you can use it to sell stuff. So and that, unfortunately, or fairly or not, is just, you know, built around Did you go to Notre Dame? Were you a Heisman candidate? Are you handsome? These are things that matter in that context.
Well, thank you, Ira, for bringing to light many of the things that happened there. It's happening this weekend, so I know I had questions about it. I think a lot of our listeners do, too. So thanks once again. Glad to get your expertise on the topic, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Ira Boudway of Bloomberg joining us here at Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Glad to have him joining us. Glad to have you, the listener, join us as well as we continue on with the show. And best of luck to Packers rookie wide receiver Trevor Davis taking part in the NFLPA rookie premiere this weekend that already got underway on Thursday. But he should have that as they talked. Ira talked about their wearing a Packers game jersey for the first time, getting to see it tonight and getting to wear it tomorrow. So that should be a really cool experience. I know if you like follow the NFLPA on Twitter, they'll like share things on social media, not just at Facebook or Instagram, perhaps as well. So go search the NFLPA and follow them. And they a lot of times will show like, oh, the rookies getting to see their game jersey for the first time, which is a cool moment, as we alluded to before. But anyway, continuing on.
Packers news of the day.
The Packers signed safety Jermaine Whitehead, previously spending two games on the 53-man roster of the Baltimore Ravens last year, but they ended up releasing him in the offseason. The Ravens previously signed him off the 49ers practice squad last year, so he was a little bit of a man in demand. And if you're a hardcore fan and did a little research on Whitehead, you may have heard he got into a verbal altercation with his position coach at Auburn, and apparently not physical from what I've heard. But if you happen to be worried about that, let me just point out that on the staff of the Packers is cornerbacks coach Joe Witt, whose father is the linebackers coach at Auburn. So if the Packers really wanted to know about Whitehead's character and what they were getting when they signed him, they probably got all they needed to know. So, that kind of went through my mind first thing, you know, when they signed him. But my once I remembered that, my mind was a little bit at ease. And Whitehead does fill the Packers roster at 90 players. Meaning from here on out, if the Packers wanted to add anyone else to the team, to the squad, sign anyone, they'd have to release someone or place someone on injured reserve. So, the roster now at its full capacity kind of lends credence to the notion that the Packers are moving on from John Kuhn. But here we are more than a week after that report, and still no confirmation from Kuhn, his agent, or anyone in the Packers organization that that's the case. I mean, the Packers could wait all, you know, as long as they want. You know, somebody like long snapper Brett Goode, too. I mean, it's not, if the Packers, you know, obviously he's coming off the torn ACL, but if the Packers wanted to sign him and say months down the road, you know, it's not going to be a big deal for them. Obviously, they sign somebody like Brett Goode, they're going to cut a long snapper, the long snapper they have already, to make room for him. And, you know, the same case they could for John Goode. It's just that you know, that's going to be a requirement, is they are going to have to make space for them. But, you know, injuries probably inevitably will happen at some point. more likely to happen during training camp than right now. But, you know, that's one way to make room on the roster. But anyway, it's at its full capacity now. Packers at 90 players, and, you know, perhaps a good thing that they added Whitehead here just before OTA start. So he ends up getting, you know, a week in their, you know, IPW phase of the offseason program. But next week he'll be here for all the team portions, and that's good. So Packers really getting things underway here. Other than that, the kind of the one other big item earlier this week, I believe this was, you know, on Monday where this was actually released after our Monday episode of Railbird Central, but there were reports of the signing bonuses the undrafted rookies received. And I often, you know, kind of look forward to this because it, you know, it's a published, an article that's get published every year. And I think this year, at least the first person to publish it was Rob Domofsky of ESPN. I believe they were probably published at, you know, other outlets as well. But anyway, I think what this is an indication of, you know, kind of how the Packers view the undrafted rookies. Perhaps the ones they view as the best, and, you know, perhaps an indication of who's most likely to make the roster of the undrafted rookies. Because, you know, every year since basically, you know, the Mike McCarthy, Ted Thompson era, and I'm not sure if this is true for every single year because we're now talking about more than a decade here in which they've been in charge, but almost every year the Packers have at least one undrafted rookie that makes the roster, usually two or three. So, I mean, these guys beat the odds all the time, or at least they one or two or a handful of them do. And I think that the size of the signing bonus is kind of a good indicator of who stands the best chance. It's certainly, you know, not a hard and fast rule or anything like that. But the Packers had five players who all received a $5,000 signing bonus, which is, you know, that's kind of the way they get players to sign. Okay. You know, when the draft ends, a lot of times they say, you know, that's a good thing for a player in that you get to now pick where you go. As had you been the last pick in the NFL draft, it's predetermined, you know, you're going to that team. But what the moment the NFL draft ends, they can go anywhere they want. And a lot of times they're influenced by a team giving you a signing bonus. You know, if they give you a signing bonus, that's going to say, they're showing me a little bit of interest, you know, I'll sign with them, as opposed to if they were to offer no signing bonus whatsoever, you know, they would go to the team that would offer the signing bonus that is interested in them. So anyway, here the five players who all received a $5,000 signing bonus, the highest the Packers offered this year, were, I'll just list them off here, wide receiver Geronimo Allison, linebacker Boniquez Brown, cornerback Mackinton Dorleant, running back Don Jackson, and wide receiver Herb Waters. So those five players, kind of the upper echelon of the undrafted free agents, the players who I would agree they stand the best chance of making the team. If I had to choose one, the one player who I thought stood the best chance of making the team, I would say it's cornerback Mackinton Dorleant. I think he stands the best chance because, you know, they'll keep quite a few cornerbacks. He's a guy with special teams experience. He's a guy that could play inside and out, slot cornerback or on the perimeter. I think he's got the best chance. Not that I don't think the other guys don't. I think linebacker Boniquez Brown stands a good chance. Running back Don Jackson stands a good chance. I mean, as good as any, at least. At positions where they could use somebody, like, you know, a third halfback for Don Jackson, or a, you know, a fourth or a fifth string inside linebacker for Boniquez Brown. I really like Geronimo Allison. I think he plays a position that is going to be tough to break through at wide receiver, where you've already got seven guys who stand a good chance of making the 53-man roster, and he's going to be the eighth or ninth, and I think it would be a long shot to make the 53-man roster, but maybe they keep him on the practice squad and develop him. So there's that to think about as well, that, you know, it could just be a year or two down the road that he makes an impact, and those guys are valuable as well. But there was the second level, the next highest signing bonus the Packers gave
was $3,500, and that went to East Carolina cornerback Josh Hawkins. And, you know, they signed nearly 20 undrafted free agents, and, you know, the price goes down from there. There's some guys who received a $3,000 signing bonus, $2,500, $2,000. In fact, one of the players I like that I've mentioned before, Louisiana Tech safety Kentrell Bryce, he was one of those that received just a $2,000 signing bonus, along with punter Peter Mortel. You know, the guys who I think, you know, also stand a good chance of making the roster, just, you know, for one, being a punter. I mean, you only have two punters, so one of them's going to win. And Kentrell Bryce getting the $2,000 bonus. So there you go. I mean, if you want to see the full list, you can go to ESPN.com and find it. And, you know, there was a few players who didn't receive a signing bonus at all, but, you know, they're probably the type of players who are lucky at all to sign an NFL contract. So they just kind of consider themselves lucky from that standpoint at all. But that was kind of some of the big news this past week in the world of the Green Bay Packers. As we get into bigger news next week with the start of OTAs and practices open to the media and the public. So there will be bigger stuff to talk about then. But next segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, today, Friday, and over the weekend for that matter, the NFLPA rookie premiere takes place. It's currently taking place right now. So Trevor Davis, wide receiver. Obviously, we've covered this already, so I'm not going to go into a whole lot more. But that takes place through Saturday. And if so, if you want something that's not related to the NFLPA rookie premiere, here's an interesting one. On Saturday, former Packers coach and new Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrinee Kevin Green is doing a fundraiser at his high school alma mater in Granite City, Illinois. So if you're a Packers fan and you live in Illinois or live near Granite City, this may interest you. What he's doing is doing a fundraiser to send his high school alma mater marching band. So the kids in the high school band, he's helping them raise funds to go play in the annual Pro Football Hall of Fame parade that they hold in Canton, Ohio every year. You know, it's kind of a big community celebration there during Hall of Fame weekend in August out there in Canton. And so they hold a parade every, obviously they hold the game, which the Packers are playing in. They hold the enshrinement ceremony the night before. And, but then they, you know, there's other events there happening as well. And they hold a parade in town. And so he's helping raising funds. There's this whole event in Granite City, Illinois on Saturday, that, you know, there's a program, you buy a ticket and Kevin Green will appear and he does a Q&A. And I think there's, I don't know if he's doing an autograph session per se, but I mean, I know there's like opportunities to win autographs, at least like there's raffles and, you know, signed memorabilia, like helmets and things like that. So anyway, I just think that's really cool that he's doing this for his high school alma mater taking place in Granite City, Illinois. Saturday. Just kind of if you're interested, Google that information and I'm sure you can find out more about it. So that's what's happening in the world of the Green Bay Packers. And next week there will be a whole lot more. We're kind of going through that, you know, that part of the offseason here where practices are held behind closed doors. Well, that's ending next week. Next week, you know, for the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks, we're going to have at least one practice open to the public every week where we can go see yourself if you want to and see the Packers up close and personal. You'll be getting reports if you follow the media and see what's happening in Green Bay, see where these rookies, how they're developing and all sorts of things. So that'll be exciting next week to talk about some actual football that's taking place at least on a practice field. So looking forward to that. So we'll see you then. Next episode, Railbird Central on Monday. We'll talk to you later, folks. Thanks to Ira Boudway of Bloomberg for joining us on the show today. Glad to have him joining us. And We'll see you next week. On behalf of everybody at Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Kirvu. My call to action, as always, as usual, if you've not done so already, the one small thing we ask, if you could give us a rating and a review on iTunes. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So if you could do us a solid, just go to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV. It'll pop right up. Give us a 5-star rating and a brief little review. We'd greatly, greatly appreciate it. That's all, folks. Have a good Friday. Have a good weekend. I leave you today with a song called Nemo by Umphreys McGee from Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go, Pack, go.